on SOFpodcast.com, iTunes, and on Square One Football Radio. This is The Sound of Football.
Welcome to another edition of the Sound of Football podcast. And this one is the start of our World Cup coverage. I'm sure you're excited. I am. Terry, you're excited, aren't you?
Really excited, yeah.
Jan, you're really excited as well, aren't you?
I'm very, very excited.
Yeah, we're like kids ripping off the cardboard in front of our advent calendars and scoffing on the top. That's how excited we are.
Yeah, we couldn't be more excited. I'm as excited as I'm ever going to be during this whole thing. Because once the World Cup starts, obviously the World Cup will have started.
Yeah.
And my excitement will depend upon the ebb and flow of the tournament. But right now, before it starts, I'm never more excited.
I know, this is the good bit. This is the bit that isn't actually affected by actual football.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm so excited a little bit of wee might just come out.
Exactly. It wouldn't surprise me. You know, let's face it.
Better than the moment. Yeah. The anticipation.
And you know, Jan, you're gonna turn 40 soon, and you know, you may as well get used to it.
Yes.
Yep. That and the third nipple.
Yes. That age-related jibe there is actually quite apposite, because we're gonna be like taken apart. We're going to be having the luxury of nostalgia this week, aren't we?
Why not? Eh?
Yeah, we're going to be looking back at old World Cups, and just to so you get into the feeling of why we're so excited about it. Well, actually, when we do go back through all these World Cups, you may end up wondering why we bother getting excited at all. But no, World Cup, it's worthwhile, isn't it? It is a bit like Christmas, though, isn't it? So, you know,
it is. It's totally like Christmas.
You get excited beforehand, but really, when it comes to it, you know, it's just the same old, isn't
it? Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I mean, it is a football fan's Christmas, isn't it? The summer international tournaments every 2 years, but the World Cup is particularly special because it's just always fairly bonkers. And even today, you still get excited about seeing teams from other nations that you don't normally see. It's not quite as exotic as it was.
No.
Because, you know, we have the internet and, you know, we've got, you know, our sports apps and malarkey, and we can watch football from all over if we want to.
Exactly. And now we follow a load of experts on our social
media.
We do, everything about everything.
Or at least they're confident enough in what they say for me to be convinced that they know everything about everything. Because I'm not going to fact check them.
No. And listeners, I suggest you don't do that either.
Oh, yes. These are memories, okay? This is not history.
Misty watercolour memories of the way we were. Yeah. So yeah, what was the first World Cup you remember?
1986.
Right, okay. So, and how old were you at the time?
11 or 12.
Right. So 1986, that was the Mexico
World Cup. It was in Mexico,
yeah. Yeah, and so the kick-off times were a bit late, but I guess at that stage you could have probably negotiated bedtime a bit more.
I could have, but I seem to remember I just kept falling asleep because it was so late, and I had to be at school the next day, so it was a bit of a crap World Cup, actually, until the knockout phases. Because we didn't start very well, did we? We lost the first game 1-0 to Portugal.
We did. We did lose to Portugal.
And then there was a draw. And
a goalless draw against Morocco.
That was so it. And then that all was lost. And everything was depending on the last game, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then we spanked Poland. Was it Poland?
It was Poland, 3-0. Yep. Morocco ended up top of that group.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, Portugal, who beat us, ended up bottom. Yeah, you know, it's weird, isn't it?
How does that even work?
I didn't remember that. And I only know because I'm looking at the screen right now and thinking...
Well, it is Wikipedia.
It is Wikipedia.
Someone
could be messing with me. It had been done. It was the very weird thing. The three teams went through because it was the 24-team tournament.
Mm.
And they had
controversial 24-team tournaments that people don't like.
Yes, but of course we went through the next round and...
Was it Paraguay?
Paraguay.
3-0.
That was a good game.
That was a good game.
Yes. Yeah. And Gary Lineker had acquired his boots.
It was all down to Lineker and Beardsley together.
Yes.
That's what it was. You start putting them to it, and they both scored in the game against Paraguay.
Did Lineker get Did he get two in that? Because he got six overall.
He got two in that game. He got a hat-trick against Poland, and he got two against Paraguay.
Did he not win the Golden Boot in that?
He did, yeah.
Yeah.
He did. Yeah. He did, yes. Yes. And then, of course, came the most famous game, which was the quarter-final against Argentina.
That's got to be one of the most famous games of football ever played. I'm not saying it's
certainly from an English perspective, yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. And infamous as well.
Yeah. I think that's probably my strongest World Cup memory of the 80s anyway. Yeah.
Mm. I mean, I was 18, so I mean, I knew full well about football injustice by that point. I mean, I guess if nothing really hammered. I mean, I imagine if you were a little bit younger and you're watching that for the first time,
yeah,
then you really did learn a lesson about just how unfair sometimes football can be, yeah, or apparently unfair. I mean, you know, we've had discussions about justice and fairness in football before, but the Maradona's second goal, of course, was absolute poetry. And really cancelled out anything else. But I mean, yeah, I think, you know, it's understandable that a lot of England fans still become quite preoccupied with the hand of God.
Well,
even though, you know, I mean, I think we've made the case in the past that Pete Shilton really should have broken Maradona's hand with his fist.
He was out-jumped to the ball.
A man who's 5 foot tall.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm sure that's not an excuse, but at the same time, I mean, if you're foolish enough to put your hand up there, then you should expect a, you know, a guy like Pete Shilton just to completely clean you out.
Yeah.
You know, so like, if you are going to cheat, mate, then I will remove you from the pitch, in which case that second goal wouldn't have happened. Yeah. And I think that Shilton has to, and also I think Terry Fenwick has to take his share of the burden for that absolutely colossal suicidal back pass.
Yeah.
So, you know, England were very much, I think, the architects of their own downfall on that note. Although the big proviso being is that it was very lucky that the referee didn't spot that handball.
Yeah, it was. And he did. I mean, even watching it, I was showing my son both of those goals on YouTube the other day, and it's the first time I've seen the hand of God moment for some time, and that happened so quickly.
Mm.
And in fact, I remember at the time not thinking there was a problem with it.
No, I have to agree with you there. I mean, it's interesting to look back and think, oh yeah, we must have been outraged at the time. But I don't think we were. I don't seem to remember.
I definitely wasn't.
I only watched the game on a portable TV.
Mm.
So I was watching it on a 14-inch screen.
Yeah,
I was as well.
You got the impression that there was something dodgy there, but it wasn't.
The commentators
very clear.
Weren't very happy about it, but yeah. there wasn't sort of like a load of replays, of course,
no.
Just to see.
Yeah.
And at the end of the transmission, they did a freeze frame and highlighted the hand, and they were at that point very much about the whole, you know, injustice of the whole thing.
It was very much what happened afterwards that really caused up all the stick and the stir. And of course, like the hand of God was the quote that he made himself.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, they were delighted because I mean they had no problem with that kind of thing, and also it was an opportunity for them to stick it to the English. Although they're not a colonial, by the way, there's the Falklands, but also the English is sort of politically seen as being something of a colonial power down the years. And so they were quite pleased to stick it to us.
The British press are always going to kind of play up to the old military confrontations, as they always do. Remember Stuart Pearce with his Tommy's helmet on and things like that. I think it's easy to forget now that was, what, 4 years after the conflict over the Falklands, which was obviously a very bloody affair. And that was hot on the heels of it. And I do remember sort of news reports at the time saying there was going to be a heavy kind of local police or security presence there because they were really concerned about both sets of supporters. Yes. And then that happened.
Yeah.
So
115,000 people at that game.
Really?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Where was it? At the Azteca?
It was the Azteca. Yeah. Yeah.
That's cathedral of the game, isn't it?
So, you could just imagine what the atmosphere that there must have been like. But there was a heavy, very heavy paramilitary police presence there for the England fan, because obviously this was also in the worst possible times for England fans.
Well, it's a year after the Heysel Stadium disaster and the subsequent ban had just happened as well. So this was when, you know, when football was in an extremely bad place.
Yeah.
You know, all round.
Yeah.
It wasn't it wouldn't be until 1990 when the recovery began, which I guess we can talk about at some point.
Well, we finished the game quite well, didn't we? Because didn't John Barnes came off? I'm remembering all of this. John Barnes came on, didn't he? And he started, as I remember it, he had a pretty good time of it when he was on, because he set up the goal for, was it Lineker's?
Lineker's
goal again, that was a cross from the left wing, I seem to remember. I don't remember the later World Cups because I was allowed to drink in those ones. But yeah, I thought we were going to do it, actually, from memory.
Yeah,
I thought we might just pull it back.
It was towards the end. Yeah, and I think that probably adds to the sense of irony about the whole thing, is that it was a close game.
I do wonder, though, in some weird sort of parallel universe where Maradona's goal had been rightly not given, the game had ended 1-1, and if it had gone to penalties... You know, the fact that the horror of penalties would have just started
4 years earlier. Yeah. You can rule that.
That's exactly
rule
right.
That out. No, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. And our memories go back a little bit further than that, though, don't they, Terry? We're old enough to remember 78.
Yeah.
Just about.
Although we were...
Yeah.
When we were
what, 8 or 9?
Yeah.
We, so,
I mean, so. my I remember the... my biggest memories of the 78 World Cup were the Scotland games.
Yeah.
And obviously the Peru game.
Yeah.
And the Holland game, the 3-2 win, which was fantastic.
Luckily enough to be able to stay up for, but yeah, it was like you know, very, very heavy eyelid.
I was given dispensation to stay up.
Yeah.
And watch that Holland game. And it was a cracking game, and Archie Gemmell's goal is one of the best in the World Cup history, in my opinion, certainly one of the best games of that tournament. It was, yeah, but I, apart from that, I just remember lots of ticker tape and just massive amounts of noise, and just being sort of like looking at the sort of flickering pictures over the television screen and thinking, man alive, this is something else, isn't it? This is really something else.
And probably for you and I both, the start of our love affair with telephone line commentaries.
Yeah, of course, yeah, because I mean it was all telephone line commentaries then, wasn't it?
So, oh yeah.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. I think 86 was probably the first one. I have a feeling that even in 86, maybe some of the later rounds were not. But in fact, if you listen back to those 86 commentaries, they're probably over the telephone. It's probably only 1990, in which they didn't,
I never considered that.
Mm.
So the images were broadcast and they were just on the phone.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. It was good. It was the local. As it still is, the local production, wasn't it?
So, yeah. So it was whatever they could do, and they weren't able to do that. And so I'm pretty certain it was 1990. In which it all came through with sort of high quality sound.
Yeah.
So 78, and you got any memories of 78, Graham? Or?
Not really. Anything beyond actually sort of like supporting Scotland. It was very, very weird of having Scotland there and not England. And I suppose it was like that again in 94 when Ireland went there and England were
there. Yeah. I was encouraged in 78 I was encouraged by my mother to support Scotland, because she said that, you know, that we were part of the Union and that you should support Scotland. And I didn't really know any differently, to be perfectly honest with you. It wasn't until later in life that I sort of like started to come to conclusion that, hang on, there's this kind of football rivalry between the two. We shouldn't be doing that. But my mum is a big sort of, you know, unionist person.
Older brother maintained that we should have supported France because they were actually closer to us where we were in Croydon than Scotland was.
No, I think there's something in that. I think there's definitely something in that.
82's in the middle of that. Funnily enough, I remember more of the qualifying campaign than the actual event. Yeah,
I don't remember the qualifying campaign at all, I don't think.
I just remember Russ getting through. I think what I remember it for was the fact that they had live games. They had the last match was live, which in those days, you know, live matches were just very, very, very rare. You didn't see that many, except at World Cups. And finals. But I do remember the last qualifying game, it was weird the 82 one, because I'd grown out of Panini stickers by then. Yes, I was 13 years old. Yes.
Don't look at me, Chief. The only time I ever did a Panini sticker was the last World Cup.
Yeah.
I've actually got one for this World Cup.
Yeah, I know, but you have a child.
You have your child's one, don't you?
Yeah, it's my chat. Yeah, he obviously bought him. I bought it, and I buy the stickers for it.
Now, then comes along 1990. Now, by 1990...
this is great. We're doing a World Cup retrospective, and we're not going to talk about Brazil 82. That's because everybody else has done. But
well, yeah, but that was the thing. It was a funny old tournament, wasn't it? Because it had two group stages, didn't it?
Yeah, it was the first expanded tournament, and it had this weird two group stages.
Yeah,
the best game of the tournament was Italy, was a semi final, I think.
Well,
which was Italy Brazil.
Yeah, but it wasn't.
Well, it wasn't the semi final.
It wasn't the semi final, was it? Yeah, yeah. Everyone says it's the
Italy Brazil. It's 3-2 to Italy.
Yeah, it was Paolo Rossi coming back, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it was great that Italy, you know, under the shadow of match fixing, and Paolo Rossi was about to be banned or had been banned, or did he come back from his ban?
Yeah.
And then against the sort of like, you know, Brazilians who were, you know, the angels, you know, great football, Socrates, you know, all of that. And they end up getting completely, you know, torpedoed by this sort of like, you know, villainous Italian side.
Who played fantastic.
Who were brilliant. Yeah. And they were also brilliant. They totally deserved to win that tournament. I mean, I think that is overshadowed somewhat. Some of those Brazilian defending was not great. And there's a reason why they didn't win that tournament.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the reason is because, you know, Italy ultimately were better than they were. And it was a decent tournament. But yeah, sorry, Graham. 1990.
Well, 1990 is quite a derided tournament, isn't it? People look back on it and think, ooh, that was...
I really liked that tournament.
Yeah, I thought it was all
right. We finished fourth.
We finished fourth.
So it was brilliant.
Yeah, I think
which
is great.
Yeah, that's why I think that's what people have got beef with.
I think it is. I think it's people who are down on England for whatever reason saying, oh, well, it was a rubbish tournament. And that, deep down they're thinking, oh, well, it's because England did well in it. But England were quite fortunate, I think, in that tournament. I don't think it was an injustice what happened to them. I think that they were, you know, they deserved their final four place, and they were probably they were probably not quite as good as finishing in the final four, but they had their moments. I mean, they had that cracking game against Belgium, didn't they, when they scored in the final minute of extra time.
Was that Platt?
Cracking goal that was.
Yes.
And I think the Belgians hit the post a few times during that game. And they were fortunate.
That was a bloody good game.
The Cameroon game was brilliant. I mean, that's one of the best games of football that you'll see. I mean, complete knockabout nonsense, you know, but on both parts. And really, I mean, the Cameroon, if they'd had any kind of discipline at the back, they'd have had us.
That was quite a high scoring game.
It's 3-2.
3-2.
Yeah.
I reckon they'd have had us if they just kept their cool.
Yeah, we got two penalties.
Yeah. And if they just played with a little bit more discipline at the back, they would have been.
Cameroon were on the crest of a wave, weren't they? After starting the tournament, beating Argentina.
What was the name of the guy who
Roger Miller?
No, but the guy who fouled.
Sorry.
I can't remember his name, but that was the getting sent off in the first game of the tournament and still winning, going down to 10 men and still beating Argentina, the world champions. I mean, that set the tone, I thought, for the World Cup. And Italy were awesome in that, for when they were playing well.
Yeah.
Baggio was in that.
Yes.
I know everyone talks about Schillaci, but Baggio scored this absolutely cracking goal from behind, from their own half. Against Austria, I think it was, in the group stages. And that was a super...
That was him kind of announcing his presence on the world stage, he did very well there.
It was good. And the Irish as well had a great tournament as well. And the Scots made fools of themselves. And there are those who would argue that a World Cup is not complete without the Scots making fools of themselves. Although by that point, I think they were maybe wise to the fact that, you know, this was a pattern and they should perhaps not be quite so... When they came along in 78, they were like, yes, we are contenders for this. we could come back with the trophy, and it went really, really badly wrong for them. And since then, they've kind of been a bit, I don't know, muted. I like that. I know it was a bit boring final, but
I think that's what the tournament's remembered for is the hopeless final, really.
Yeah.
It was an awful final. Not only was it bad, but there was also bad decisions in it as well.
Yeah. But Italy should have got through to that final. If they won the semi-final on penalties, that Argentina side was not good. Maradona was well off.
They finished third in their group and still got through. And I think you look at the teams they beat on there. They beat Italy and they beat Brazil. So it's saying that they didn't deserve to be there. But
Brazil were grisly in that tournament as well. It was not vintage Brazil. And Italy, I think, they were the bells of the... I mean, they were really turned up for that, as you would expect, being the hosts. And I thought it was a bit of a tragedy because, I mean, they would have won the World Cup because Italy always beat Germany. So they'd have won that. And I think they would have been deserving winners. And I think that the complexion of that tournament would have altered quite a lot had that penalty shootout gone differently.
Yeah.
But there it is.
There it is. It finished West Germany 1, Argentina 0. I watched that in a caravan.
Did you?
Yeah. Yeah, I was away on holiday. Strange. Yeah, right. I've gone away for the weekend.
Holiday's obviously a bit of a thing for you during the World Cup.
Yeah, because they usually
in summer.
People have a tendency to like book things, like, you know, trips away and everything. So, yeah.
I don't, I'm cheap. '94?
Should we skip that one?
That was a great tournament, that was.
It was great. Yeah,
in America land.
In America, yeah. Land, that was a good tournament. I mean, in the intervening time between England finishing, you know, on a high, and this was because also 1990 was the beginning of the English football revival.
Yeah,
as well. I mean, if English football was in a bad place in '86, it was in an even worse place by 1990 because of course Hillsborough had not long happened.
Yeah,
and people were just really down on football, but Gazza's tears and. Yeah. And all of that, you know, changed that to a large extent. I think the Premier League's got an awful lot to thank the English national team from 1990 for the revival of the sport. Mm. I don't think you'll hear them saying that much, but I mean, I think that's a fact. But by that point, then after that, Graham Taylor took over and proceeded to suck the life out of the English national team.
Yes.
Yeah.
And consequently, we didn't qualify.
Very long ball tactics.
Yeah, or I mean, even more than that, I mean, just, you know, gratuitous selection of Carlton Palmer. total, you know, I mean, Beardsley had been pretty much dropped, not immediately afterwards, but quite soon.
Yes.
You know, Waddle had just had gone, even though he was still playing pretty well. I mean, arguably really well. I mean, the only players left of that team that were any good were Platt and Lineker, really.
Mm.
And that wasn't really enough.
Yeah, and that and Lineker played out 92. Well,
he finished in 92, didn't he? That's right. And he finished in the Minis League because he was substituted on his final appearance.
Yeah. And of course, some people would say, well, you know, if Shearer had been fit, we would have probably got through that qualification group.
It's possible.
And if Gazza had been fit as well. Yeah.
And Gazza, of course, was going through his clownish phase.
Yes.
Where I mean, it had all gone really well for him, and then he just. Messed up in that cup final against Nottingham Forest in 91, injured himself, went to Lazio with the injury, didn't play for ages, never really settled, and then just kind of went off the rails a bit. He had some great, in that qualifying tournament, he had some moments. I mean, against Turkey, he was brilliant. Mm. He was brilliant against that, but, I mean, they just weren't enough. So it's a bit of a tragedy, but at the same time, we were otherwise pretty awful.
Yes.
Mm. And, I mean, it wasn't, you don't like to see your teams not qualify, but, I mean, once that had been confirmed that they weren't going through, I did actually quite enjoy 94. I could enjoy it without worrying about, you know, how England were going to stink the place out with their crap football and tedious manager. So, yeah. I mean, Romania, remember them? Georgi Hagi? Ilya Dimitrescu?
Yes.
Gica Popescu? Yeah, and Bulgaria?
Yeah.
Risto Stoichkov, or Stoichkov, as Trevor Bookie insisted on calling him. Honestly, Stoichkov, how hard is it? Stoichkov.
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 No. Stoichkov. Stoichkov. No. Stoichkov. Cough. Stoichkov. Stoichkov.
So he didn't get it then?
He didn't get it throughout the entire tournament. So that was...
Yeah, but I think another tournament that was perhaps let down for its final as well. But
yeah, that was a ghastly final, wasn't it? But I mean, and it was a penalty shootout that decided it. And Roberto Baggio, who again, alas, missing from a penalty.
Mm.
But my recollection of Brazil for that tournament was that they were pretty decent, and you know, I thought that, you know, they deserved it. And if anything, Italy were slightly undeserving. I don't remember them being that hot. Nigeria played in that. tournament, didn't they? Was it not their first performance?
Yeah, they were beaten by Italy in the second round. Time.
They played well in the group stage. Mm. Iacchini, I think, scored that. Yeah.
Yes, the image of him at the back of the net.
That's right. Yes. And Ireland. I lived in Fulton Heath, which in Croydon, which is at the time had many Irish residents there, and spent some happy hours being Irish in a pub Irish flatmate.
It was the 1994 thing to do.
And it was very much... Yeah, that's right. The Water Boys were in there.
Drinking Guinness.
We were drinking Guinness and listening to the Water Boys. It was all good. So we were all Irish. Well, everyone's grandmother was Irish.
where were you for that one, though? Were you?
Oh, 94.
Had you started uni then?
No, it was the year before I went. I've no idea. It was around university time, so there was probably a high chance that I was probably on some kind of substance or other, which is probably why I can't remember it.
Might not include that in the final cut, yeah.
1994.
Hmm. Well, I have
no idea what I was doing in 1994.
The Lost World Cup. Bilton's Lost World Cup. Go onto YouTube when you get home and then just like type it all in and then just remark. In fact, there's a BBC retrospective of the 1994 World Cup that was produced shortly after it took place.
For people like me.
And so just sit there and you go, oh yeah, every five
seconds.
That was a brilliant World Cup, I can't believe.
That was my second year at university, yeah, I probably don't remember a lot about that one.
You were probably just discovering girls, weren't you?
Yes.
Right, France.
France in 98, yeah, I had finished university by then.
France 98, for me, I think I watched every game down a pub, I think. I'm pretty sure.
I can pretty much remember every
day, and I was down the pub for all of them.
Yeah.
I was in the pub for the whole... I only occasionally left. I watched the 1998, World Cup 98 in the pub.
Mm.
I was living in Brighton at the time.
Nice.
Michael Owen, yes.
Michael Owen.
Yes, that goal against Argentina.
Yeah, Diego Simeone.
Yes.
Yes.
Beckham getting sent off.
But see, the thing is, this is interesting because I got into a conversation with a Manchester United supporter about that shortly after our exit to Argentina. And he blamed Glenn Hoddle, which I thought at the time was stretching things a bit, but he says no. He said because, and I've since reflected on this, there's a couple of things about Glenn Hoddle's way he managed that team that I don't like. The one was that David Beckham was first choice right midfielder for England until the day before the Tunisia game, which was our first game. And then he was swapped for Darren Anderton, just dropped, just like that. Since then, there really hadn't been any indications to why that was. And there's been talk that perhaps Hoddle was too concerned with getting into Beckham's head and didn't play him right, didn't coach him properly, and ended up and just dropped him.
Interesting.
Because it's true. I mean, up to that point, David Beckham had earned that point. And as we know, David Beckham, you know, fiercely patriotic, very much loyal to the whole England thing, very took his old England career very seriously. And didn't put him, and their argument this guy put up was that he was in a bad frame of mind when he was eventually recalled, and that accounted for his moment of petulance, and that in fact if he'd been better coached, that might not have happened.
Which is an interesting thing
about that is that he left Paul Gascoigne behind.
Yes.
Which I don't think was a good idea.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not convinced sufficiently about Glenn Hoddle, again, because there's a reputation that he has that he resents people around him who are or were more talented than he was as a player.
Mm.
And now, I don't know whether there's anything in that, but I mean, I'm dubious about the amount of influence that Glenn Hoddle has on our modern structure, and I was disappointed to learn that he was on the FA Commission. For reasons also based upon the reasons for his leaving as well.
Yeah, because he was mental.
Because of all them things he said.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
to the times. And I'm not convinced that England 98 side had Shearer, Sheringham, it had Paul Scholes in it.
Yeah.
I mean, you had a back four, we had Graham Lasso, we had Tony Adams in that team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We had David Seaman. There's from 1 to 11. There were some cracking players in that side, and we got knocked out in the second round in extra time. And of course, we had Mark Lowe, and to a team that we had on the ropes.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, in my book, I think you've got to look to the coach. I reckon Hoddle's got a bit of a pass on France 98, and I don't rate. I think a different manager might have got us a little bit further. And I'm not saying England could have won France 98, but we had only 2 years earlier. We were just a kick away from the final of Euro 96. We were at home and we were a bit lucky. But you know, we built upon that and improved.
There was a lot of positivity.
That was
going
a really
around.
Really good side.
I don't think
that should have been our tournament.
We did have a nightmare draw because Argentina went on to be knocked out in the next round to the Netherlands.
Yeah, no, I mean, that was...
Who were subsequently knocked out by Brazil,
certain we would not have won that tournament, and we wouldn't probably have got to the final, but I mean, we had those guys by the short and curlies, and I think we blew that, and I think you've got to look to the coach personally in that. That's my own personal view after having given far too much thought on England 98. Because, I mean, we talk about 2006 and the golden generation, but I think our best team since 66 was that 98 squad. I mean, that was a brilliant squad, that was.
So what happened in 2002 then?
Yeah, what did... I don't know. I was at work for 2002, so I don't know.
Guess where I was? I was on holiday. I only missed the first week. I watched the England Argentina game, the game of where Beckham scored his penalty and
redemption.
Yes, and celebrated as much as Cristiano Ronaldo did when he scored in the
Champions League final.
That was for his film. That was for a film.
Was it?
Yes.
Oh, right.
What, Ronaldo?
Yes.
Oh, was it? Is that
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's been... he did it. He was over the top and took his shirt off to reveal his... You know,
oh, right. So for a movie, is it?
It was for a movie called Ronaldo the Movie.
No.
You heard it here first, folks.
I'm definitely not seeing that.
Yeah.
No, the that game I watched in bed, having I either got norovirus or I got food poisoning.
Oh, yeah,
I had a very, very interesting night the night before that game, which was I will not go into the detail, but it was horrific. And the next day I couldn't go to work because I was dying. I really was in real trouble, and I lay there. Just with
the being sick on an England game.
I'm sticking to it now. All these years later, I was absolutely dying.
You realise your boss is probably not listening to you. You can tell us the truth.
My boss at the time was German, actually. He was, and even now he continues to be
even
German.
Even now he's still German.
He's still German, yeah. But yeah, and when Beckham scored the penalty, I just couldn't do anything. I was just... I think I had a nice sleep after that.
Yeah, I don't remember too much about it. I mean, I experienced Italy's getting knocked out by South Korea through you, Graham.
Yeah.
I was at work and there were no TVs to be found. And we didn't have social media in 2002. We had email. And Graham was giving me live updates. Because I couldn't even get a browser open back then. I mean, everything was locked down. So my desktop was locked down. All I had was my work email. And I was getting updates from Graham about what was going on, and he couldn't believe it. And I was telling people around me, and the guy I was sat opposite with wasn't Italian; he was from Worthing, but he was an Italy fan. He was one of these guys who got into Serie A during the 1990s, James Richardson and all of that. And I said to him, "Your career have won. Italy have just they've lost." This place was really quiet. Everyone there was not much chatting going on. It was a really quiet office because there's a lot of concentrating going on. And he went, "Fuck off." And he was like, put his hand over his mouth, and like the boss thought, I looked round at us, and he's kind of, so we're like, we weren't on permanent contract. So it was like, oh shit, you know. And that was probably... Yeah, and I didn't actually watch hardly any of the 2002 World Cup. I watched it at the weekends. I got as much in as I possibly could.
Yeah.
But I have very few, you know, memories of that tournament, unfortunately.
Yeah, it was an odd tournament because it was actually held in two halves. It was like two separate tournaments because usually if you play someone in the groups stages, you won't play them again until the final. But because it had two hosts, they had Japan's half of the draw and they had Korea's half of the draw. So it ended up that that Brazil, who had already played Turkey in the group stage, and it was their first game, and then they played them as semi-finals. Now, for people who like you know, game administration like I do, it's like, yeah, that was terrible. That was just like, that just spoiled it for me. It just ruined the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, it was an odd one though, wasn't it? Because Japan and South Korea obviously not getting on very well at all, and this tournament was seen as being a way of trying to sort of like heal a few wounds between two nations that you know really really don't like each other very much. So yeah, it was a bit of a disjointed, and it, because of the time difference, it felt disjointed. You never quite got engaged with 2002.
Was that the first tournament to have two countries hosted?
Yeah. And only.
So far.
We haven't gone back down that road yet. No. Although who knows? Maybe in 2022 we might do.
Yeah.
What's your overriding memory of 2006, then, Terry?
Well, I'm a lucky boy because I managed to get along to a game in 2006.
Mm.
I went to see Italy versus Ukraine at Hamburg.
Wow.
Yeah. So that would be my experience. That Italy won that game 4-0.
Do you know what I remember is the fact that we were actually producing content then as well.
Well, yeah, of course, it was our. That's right. We started doing the Onion Bag in 2003.
Yeah.
And so 2006 was our first World Cup.
Yeah.
Creating content.
Mm.
We produced a game, didn't we?
We produced our World Cup pullout.
We got onto
MSN's top 30 websites.
Yeah.
Three times.
We did.
Yep.
This was back when, and we sold t-shirts and we made money from advertising.
We did.
That's how big we got for that sort of six weeks.
We were internet famous for about half a day.
We broke a Dreamhost server.
Yeah, we
and
did.
We're not joking. Yeah. We were moved over to an evaluation server. That's how big we suddenly went. And then we went back to being a backwater again. But you know, those were heady days.
Heady days in the internet.
Yeah.
Yes, even before Twitter or anything.
Just before Twitter. Twitter came along a few months afterwards.
Yeah.
My overriding memory of 2006 is Zinedine Zidane.
Yes.
He was immense.
Mm.
But also particularly, was it the game against Spain, which was immediately after the England game where we were knocked out?
Mm.
And it was like really sickening, I felt. I mean, and it was one of those moments when you went, I never want to watch another game of football again for the rest of my life. And then I did.
And then all of a sudden another one comes along.
Another football match happened. And Zidane was just amazing. And I just thought, man, I really love this sport. It's such a good game that you can feel so crap about something. And then Zidane comes along and makes everything better.
Mm.
And although, you know, his fall from grace in the final was you know, in some ways, you know, unpoetic and very sad, there's something about it that I find quite gratifying.
I quite like that moment, actually, because it was so, so violent.
Yeah.
it wasn't just a case of, like, Beckham flicking his heel out or you know, was it Rudy Vollard spitting it.
Really, was Frank Reichard spitting it.
Yeah, wasn't. I mean, this was. I mean, he actually went out to really maim him.
Who
headbutting?
Who hasn't thought about headbutting Marco Materazzi? Come on, listeners, be honest.
Brilliant.
Who hasn't? You know?
It was just so blatant. There was just nothing in it. Like, did he just headbutt him in the chest?
Zidane has got the lot. He's got World Cup. He's got European Championship. He's got League, and he's got Champions League.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean. And now he gets to take his bow, his final game as a professional footballer. And if he wants to headbutt Marco Materazzi, then I say he can do it.
Yeah.
You know, he's earned that right. And so fair play to him, you know. I mean, obviously it cost his teammates the game, you know. So it was an incredibly selfish thing to do. But, you know, sometimes you just have to think for yourself, you know, think of yourself.
Well, I salute him for that. I think it's one of the highlights of any game of football I've ever watched. Although I did see Reza Ruduk kick
The best game I saw was also a very violent game. Reza Rulic kicked a former Palace player who was playing for Sheffield United, I think, at the time. And Rulic had been wound up by this guy the whole game. And the chap, whose name escapes me, passed the ball on, and Rulic was about, I don't know, he must have been 10 metres away from him, and then started running at him and just kicked him square in the chest. And then just walked off. And it was just, he didn't even wait for the referee. He just walked off.
Speaking of violent games, the 2006 has also got that Holland and Portugal match, isn't it? Which finished at about 4 men ago, isn't it?
Yeah.
violent football matches, particularly in World Cups. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it.
There's not. I mean, it's a good chance for nations to, you know, settle old scores.
Absolutely. Well, that's what these things are all about, aren't they? Yeah. I mean, you know, they're about, you know, they're like Eurovision. They're an expression of international hostility.
Yeah.
You know, without having to, you know, kill.
Not harmony. Hostility.
No, and they don't bring nations together. They make sure that everyone understands what our differences are. And they're also becoming increasingly a way of people to make lots and lots of money.
Yes. Then South Africa, 2010. Yeah, by which time, which was the Twitter World Cup, wasn't it? Really, it was like, you know, people had social media, so we could all share our thoughts about it.
Hashtags and everything.
Special
hashtags, and that also had a little flag. And whenever you put the correct hashtag, Twitter would also put a little flag next to it, next to the hashtag. So if you put ING, E-N-G, then you'd have a little St. George's cross right next to it. Yeah, absolutely. Twitter had it going on by that point. They knew about football by then.
Wow.
So we
produced a load of content as well for it as well, didn't we? So
we did. Sound of Football was going back then.
Sound of Football, yes. Sound of Football. Wow.
This is our second World Cup. This is the Sound of Football's second World Cup.
Yeah. Have you actually listened back to any of those?
I listened back to about 10 minutes of one this afternoon, actually.
Yeah.
As it happens. And it's a little bit first series Star Trek: The Next Generation.
But John, I think
you haven't got the beard,
yeah. Or the eye patch. great. Now I'm Riker. Does that make Oakens Tasha Yar?
Yeah, possibly. Yeah. I think the analogy probably breaks down there. Much like Yan is doing now.
Oh, God. That was funny. I really lost my shit there. That was really good.
Yeah, I think that was the where our content took a positive turn after the Algeria game.
That was great. I didn't listen to that. But the best thing about the Algeria game was when we came back. We used to do bookends, so we would say we preview it, and then we would come watch the game, come back at half time, talk about it, and then watch the second half, and then come back and do that. We did quite a few of those during the World Cup.
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
I don't know whether we'll be doing it again this year.
To be honest, it was a nice experiment.
But after the Algeria game, as soon as we pressed record, the first thing Randy was going, "Ah!"
Yes,
we were so angry.
We were.
I've never been so angry watching England play football. That was a disgrace. And then Wayne Rooney at the end of it, criticising the fans for not getting behind him, was like, "You've just delivered this big splat, this huge turd, and you expect people to go, 'Yay, England!'"
It was utterly hopeless. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, no wonder we went out.
Even the mild man of Chris Oakley wrote this vitriolic podcast, a blog post on Some People on the Pitch.
Yes.
Criticising Wayne Rooney. 600 words. Yeah. Just on that one moment. Yeah. See, that's how much bile. And Chris, you know, is an amiable man who tends not to, tends to blog and write about nice things.
But such is the power of World Cups, isn't it?
Such is the power.
We'll see a lot of bile coming out over the next month or so, won't we?
Yeah, well, I think we might do a little bit better this time around. We certainly can't do any worse.
It's going to be good, isn't it? Come on, Jan. How optimistic? Come on. On a scale of 9 to 12, how optimistic out of 10 are you?
That doesn't make any sense.
No,
it's a World Cup. It doesn't make sense.
Look, you know...
I'm sorry. I don't think we're going to do very well at all.
Yeah, you're going to be shockingly realistic about it. Mr. Optimism's going to call around to your house. He will do. The magic optimistic fairy is going to come around and you're going to believe.
They'll break your heart every time.
You've got to be optimistic about a World Cup. You've got to be optimistic going into a World Cup. Otherwise, what's the point in qualifying?
It's
the right of every team that qualifies for the World Cup to feel optimistic about it. Mm. Otherwise, you know, because you've earned that right. So, Come on, England.
Well, listeners, we're not going to keep you anymore because this has already gone way over time. But it was great. And it only is left for me to say we're going to have a preview of the World Cup next week. Mm-hmm. So you'll be able to find out all the facts and know everything.
Lots of facts. Yes. Facts Creek.
It's going to be the definitive podcast, isn't it?
Hang on. I thought, we could do that. Or we could just do a prediction game and do that.
Yeah,
anyway,
that sounds like an even
better
idea.
Yeah. Does that mean we don't have to do any research?
No research. All I need to do is read out the list of things.
You tell me
who you wouldn't be surprised would win.
That sounds brilliant. Yep. Because we don't like.
And I'll bring the soccer dice, and we'll play the final using the soccer dice.
Wonderful. Yeah. Let's do that.
Yeah, we'll do that. Okay, so until then, listeners, enjoy your week and keep getting your excitement levels pumped up because we need you to be excited too. But for me, Graham Sibley, from Yamdon, and from Terry Fellon, goodbye.
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 You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @soundoffootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
Join us again for another round of Sound of Football Top Trumps. It's still going on. It's actually getting more and more even now. You've got 7 cards, listeners, because you're on a roll. You've won two games in a row. Jan's pack has not won a round for a little while now, and it's when from a position of complete dominance.
Yeah.
It's now sort of not looking so
strong. Yeah,
so
I just lacked the killer instinct, really.
Yeah, what do you think? Do you think they went a bit sort of like Bayern? They sort of like just took the foot off the gas in the middle of March?
Yeah, I think there was a little bit of complacency. Yeah. Some decisions weren't as good as they could have been, and, we are where we are. We'll learn from it and we'll get stronger.
How are you feeling this week?
I'm fairly confident, actually.
Okay,
could
Terry.
Be all right. Yeah.
I've got a good card, but with one significant flaw.
Ah, right.
So it happens that the listeners choose that significant flaw, then I am boned.
Right. Well, let's see how.
No one wants to see you boned, Terry.
No one should see me boned. No.
No. Unfortunately, that will be giving us all nightmares. Well, listeners, you've got Wesley Snyder, who's leading your attack today, and we put it to Twitter earlier, and Twitter unanimously chose trophies.
Fine, though.
Trophies. Wesley Snyder has 14 of them. So, Terry.
Edson Cavani is a brilliant player, but he hasn't won much. Two trophies.
Two trophies is accurate as of the 30th of March, 2012.
Iron Robin.
Ooh.
Ooh, wow.
Ooh, hello.
Trophies.
Yeah.
13.
Oh! And the irony being, of course, that if this
by
was
now,
more
he's probably
pack,
got double that by
he'd
now.
He'd have beaten that.
Man.
Man alive. Well, oh, there you
bloody
go.
Bloody Schneider.
Yes.
I'll get you, Schneider.
Bloody out-of-date pack. Join us again next time for some more Sound of Football Top Trumps.
I'm going to miss my train, man, because it leaves in 5 minutes.
Hmm.